From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 14th day of March 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. And a bit later in the program, TGM's Matt Bennett will be here to look at the agricultural cash grain markets. Along the way, we'll hear another installment from Lisa Braltz of her In My Backyard segments, and we'll take up the weather forecast. It all happens during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's check the numbers in Chicago as they settled up for a Thursday afternoon. Settlement prices from the soft red winter wheat pit, March contract at 714 and a quarter. And it is a settlement price up 7 cents for the day, July at 720. Settled 11 and three quarters of a cent higher in Kansas City. The hard red up 2 3/4 on a settlement at $7.42. And a quarter. From the corn pit back in Chicago, an 8.5 cent loss in the March as it settled out and closed for the day and finished in expiration at noon or thereabouts, 732 3/4. The May, the new lead option settled at 715.5, up 5 1/4. That's actually a close. July at 699 1/4 on its close, up 7. And September corn at 584.5, up 5 1/4 cents. December futures 558.5, up 3.5. And March contract for next year in the corn pit at $5.69 1/4, up 4 3/4. The soy complex now, March beans finished and went off the board down 17 3/4 of a cent at 14.57 1/4. May contracted 14.35 1/2, down 11.5, and July at 14.16, 9 cents lower. August at 13.75 3/4, the settlement price down 7. September, as the settlement prices are in there in the bean pit at 13.01 1/2, down 6.5, and November beans at $12.59 and 3/4. Down 2 3/4 for the new crop. Bean meal futures at 422.80, down 4.20. Bean oil 27 cents lower at $49.09. Live cattle futures finished up the April contract at 128 1/5, 50 cents lower. June futures were down 30 on the settlement at 123.15. The March feeders at 138.27 1/2, down 72 1/2 cents. In April at 141.55, $1.17 1/2 lower. And lean hogs on the day at $89.80. Settled a dime higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, April contract at $92.96 a barrel, up 44 cents. Gasoline for the wholesale price on the RBOB at 313 7/10. That's a half of a cent lower. Ethanol at 263, up 4 7/10 of a cent. And the difference between the two now 50 7/10 of a cent. A nickel and 2 2/10 of a cent narrower than yesterday. Natural gas at 382 1/10. That's 14 1/10 of a cent higher for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.92 8/10 of a cent, 3/10 of a cent higher. And the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,590.70 an ounce, up $2.30. U.S. dollar down 0.27 at 82.61 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. A chance of rain, that'll come before 4 o'clock, a bit of snow maybe even, and then a slight chance of rain, cloudy, a high of 41, south winds at about 11 miles an hour, they'll gust all the way to 16. Chance of precipitation this afternoon set at 30%, to 9 to 10% chance of rain before 7, partly cloudy and a low of 28, and then tomorrow, partly sunny skies, a high of 54 degrees, tomorrow evening, a 40% chance of rain, mostly cloudy and a low of 36, and then on Saturday, partly sunny and a high near 45. Saturday night, cloudy and 29. On Sunday, a 40% chance of rain returns. Partly sunny skies for a good portion of the day, a high of 41, and then a chance of rain and snow showers in the evening on Sunday. Mostly cloudy and 31. Monday, rain, cloudy, 46. Monday night, partly cloudy and 24. It'll be windy. Tuesday, sunny and a high of 37. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 24 degrees. And on Wednesday, sunny skies, a high near 45. A more complete look at the weather forecast later in the half hour. Of course, listening to the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 14th day of March. I'm Todd Gleason from U of I Extension. On the phone line today is Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises and based out of Mandeville, Louisiana, but I believe somewhere in the Midwest, maybe in the state of Illinois today. Hi, Dan. Where are you today?
I just got done with a new meeting at Utica with a group of farmers just visiting about the market. I'm on my way to Bloomington right now and probably catch a flight down to Texas tomorrow afternoon.
All right. Well, we'll keep you busy because as soon as we get done with this, about half an hour after that or an hour after we're done here, we're going to record Commodity Week a bit early this week at 3:30, so I'll give you a call again then. I won't be in tomorrow. I'm going to go on spring break at this with my children. They decided I should go with them. I don't know why.
Are you going south?
My wife and the youngest boy are staying here, but I'm going south. Costa Rica this time around.
Oh, well, that might be warmer. I got a phone call from my son today, and he's in Panama Beach or Panama City, Florida, and said it was 40 degrees this morning. So they weren't going out into the water today.
Yeah, you know, I say spring break, but really they're on a study abroad program. They're both in the community college here locally because they just don't know what they want to do yet. And we're going on a study abroad program in the agriculture program from Parkland. So I'm really looking forward to that. It should be a great trip. We'll be there for 10 days. So
that'll be good.
Yeah, yeah. They'll get some good credits and they'll get to see what I do from time to time because traveling the world and bouncing around on farms in strange places is a lot of fun. I do that more often. I've been very lucky and done that quite a bit. Let's talk about what happened in the marketplace, though. At the moment, the March contracts all, I think, expired and went off the board, at least in the grains and the oil seeds today. Did it go pretty normally or not?
Well, a lot of times when your front months have a premium to the next month that's going to become lead futures, you'll get a lot of weakness, and I think that's kind of what we maybe have seen over the last day or two. As this March contract expires, May futures now will have a ways to climb to kind of fill in, especially corn. It's going to come on lead futures month well underneath what the March futures is going to go off at. So it'll be the function of the market then for May corn futures to try to rally and close that lead futures chart gap. Probably as we go on into that March 28th report here in a couple weeks, that's the main focus of the market at this point. You know, what's the stocks number going to be and what kind of planning number is USA going to throw at us, at least initially. And then by then, the weather will become more important, I think, looking out to see what kind of weather we're going to have during the first half of April, because at least the way we're going at the moment, there's not going to be a lot of early planting, at least what we see right now anyway.
It's we'll know what the gap looks like once we open again tonight, but at the moment, it could be as much as 16 cents. That's a pretty good-sized gap to fill to the upside, I would think.
Well, corn has a muscle to do that. I mean, like I say, you know, in the cash grain market, cash corn is just getting harder and harder to find. If the December 1 stocks number is to be believed, and we know there's variance factors in all of these stocks numbers, that this March 1 number is going to show very tight stocks. And it is very well could show that we still have a lot of work to do in the form of rationing old crop inventories. A lot of people are kind of relating this year to similar to what we did in 1996. The 95 crop was short, and we needed to ration inventory, and the March 31st report came out, and it showed that we failed to do any rationing at all during the first 6 months of the crop year. So then that was the year that we broke into new record highs and marched our way on to 550. And whether or not we have that much power behind the market, we'll have to see what USDA gives us as far as the numbers go. But, you know, as I have talked many times at Outlook meetings, that it just seems that we're 400 million bushels short of supply to get by. So either we're going to have to cut demand by 400 million, or we're going to have to maybe import a couple hundred million bushels of corn from maybe Brazil. We maybe have to feed, you know, 100 to 150 million bushels of wheat, or a combination of thereof, some cut back, whatnot. But it just looks to me like we need to find another 400 to 500 million bushels of corn and or ration that demand to get by. And then, you know, to top it off this year, you know, a year ago we were 80 degrees. Some farmers were starting to plant in central Illinois. And today we still have snow around, and it's the forecast that you kind of read to the audience there before I came on. Does it look like we're going to be planting anytime soon?
No, it doesn't look like we'll be moving anytime soon, but it is the month of March, and well, we got some time to do that. So let me take this $400 million up. How much of that do you really think we can ration out? Do you think a couple hundred million, and then that we can ration out, and then 200 million that we would have to replace with substitute wheat, maybe some imports of corn? Where do you stand on, I guess?
Well, it all depends upon your area, and it's probably going to be rationed out in the ethanol market. It'll be that ethanol plant that will have bought all the corn up in their buying area, their circle, whatever it is, 50-mile circle, 100-mile circle, whatever it is. Once they bought all that corn up, and then they got to keep going out further and start paying a higher price for it, then they go into the red, so they shut down. So we have already had several shut down, and my guess is that will be the model as we go forward. If we do need to cut back $400 million, it'll be just one plant at a time as they run out of corn in their buying area. And as I said, we're halfway through the marketing year, and corn supplies are very tight. So that's my guess. It's going to work out that way. I think we will see some Brazilian corn imports come into the Southeast market probably this summer, whether that's 100 million or 150 million. I do think we're going to see some of that come in. And we're already starting to hear soft red winter wheat inventory moving to Hereford, Texas. So it sounds like some of the cattle feedlots are willing now to start mixing some wheat in their rations. So, and that, I think that's what's given wheat somewhat of a boost. Wheat has been a feed grain the way it's been priced. We had a good weekly export sales number. And then talk of that working its way into feed rations to ease the supply of corn. So I think that's one of the reasons why we had a pretty strong wheat market here today.
So at the end of the year, will we have 600, 800, or a million left in the bin for corn?
Well, my best guess, and all it is a guess, is I think it'll be tough to get it underneath 800 million. Like I said, I think we're 200 million too short on feed usage already, and then that all of a sudden that puts any stocks down around 400. So then that tells me that we got to either cut 400 million worth of demand out, or we're going to have to replace it with some other commodity.
So you're really looking for the export market's done. So you're really truly looking for ethanol just to shut down at some point.
Well, I think that explains why the RINs are at a dollar. I think your oil companies are already looking ahead, realizing they have to fulfill the mandate, but the supply is not going to be there because the corn's not there to grind. So I think that's why your RIN levels are at a dollar or whatever, and the market is already preparing for some of that as we get toward the end of the crop year.
This was not something we didn't expect. We've been thinking about the RIN market and that it might be used this year and next, potentially, since last fall, I suppose. So it's one of the things that's, I guess, a safety net of some sort built into the marketplace.
Well, that's what it looks like today, 2 weeks from now.
It might not look so safe.
the whole picture could be turned upside down.
Yeah.
It's interesting times work in a market like this. You just don't know what you're going to wake up to the next morning or what's going to come into play. I still am very concerned with outside market activity. It just looks to me like there's a lot of turbulence in the currency markets, in the financial markets with interest rates, and our politicians can only kind of run the government 1 month at a time, it looks like. Who knows what the picture is going to look like as we go down the road, three to six months. But there's no doubt about it that if weather breaks favorable, our way, we'll have a nice big crop, and prices are going to be lower than what we've had over the past few years, but I don't think sharply lower. I think anything sharply would have to be also triggered by some other force, and then I think then that would be more of a short-term spike in the market on the downside, and then we could recover. But there's no doubt about it that we're walking a thin line on overall food supplies, at least at the moment.
Thank you so much, Dan. I'll talk to you again in another hour.
Okay, very well.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. And from Common Ground Food Co-op, now at Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. Learn more on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, In My Backyard. In part two of her series on food and love, Lisa Brott learns how bread, specifically sourdough, brought two people together.
Farmers markets seem to be one of the places to casually run into people, and no wonder. Markets happen under usually sunny skies with lots of food as scenery, people in good moods abound. I like to call it the meat market. In part one of this series on food and love, Hunter and Debbie's meeting took place over broccoli. In the story I'm about to tell you, it wasn't broccoli. It was bread, sourdough bread. Dushan and Carissa Katic's first meeting comes across as a total stereotype, something you might see in a romantic comedy on the big screen. I'll set the scene. Handsome young man is working behind one of the many tables at Urbana's Market at the Square, the Saturday farmer's market in Urbana, Illinois, when suddenly...
I was working for Picara at that time, and I just wanted to get out. You know, I've been hiding in a cave the whole time as a baker. And so I went out there, and I've been doing this farmer's markets this whole time. And it was real nice. You saw lots of people, lots of girls, lots of guys. Friends would be coming over. You'd be able to talk to them. And one day, this girl comes up and asks me a question. She's like, how do you do your sourdough? And she had these big blue eyes. I was like, whoa. And she had this really nice white dress. So I answered the question, and she was, said, thanks. And I said, hey, by the way, nice dress. And she blushed.
That line about the sourdough, though, it wasn't a line. Carissa was working with her family at the family business. They own Curtis Orchard in Champaign, Illinois, but was also pursuing a separate endeavor outside of work, perfecting sourdough bread.
Then on the side, I really wanted to learn how to make bread. I'd read a book or two, and I was just like, this looks so fascinating, especially the sourdough. So I was trying to do the starter, first of all, because to do a sourdough, you have to have the starter. But it was not working. It would die. It would just turn out tasting really funny, smelling really funny. So I was like, I have to see somebody do it. I have to hear, ask my questions or bring it or, get some troubleshooting advice. And so then I don't even remember who it was. Just one of my friends was like, go to the farmer's market. That's where you find all the good quality foods. You're going to find somebody there. There's a baker. Go talk to him.
The sourdough Q&A brought about an eventual meeting between the two at Picara's Bakehouse for a sourdough demonstration by Dushan. He had started baking by accident while in the military overseas and found he had a serious knack for it. Anyway, Dushan ended up giving her some of his sourdough starter, and it was on. Theirs was a fairly traditional courtship, not unlike the breads they now produce together, with Dushan getting permission from Carissa's dad before he asked her to marry him, a trip overseas to meet Dushan's family, a wedding, and, less than a year later, a baby. They didn't start their own business right away, though. Despite his passion for bread, Dushan was considering becoming a PhD candidate in philosophy at the University of Illinois. Then they weighed their options.
If you get into this school, you're going to make, you know, so much amount of money, maybe 17 grand. But we also really want to start a family. Are we going to be able to do this? Are we going to be able to support a family while you're going to grad school? Well, you'll be working at Pekara part-time, so we'll figure this out. Well, what if I don't get into philosophy school? What then? So we started coming up with different ideas, and one of the things that we saw was farmers markets were profitable. He knew from working in the farmers market that it was a good way to go. And so what we did is we made a deal with Seika, who owns Pekara, to rent her ovens and then go find our own markets and start selling our own line of breads.
As it turns out, Dushan didn't get into grad school, but I'm not sure school would have won, even if he had. Part of what keeps Dushan and Carissa together is their incredibly strong work ethic, their mutual belief in locally produced food, and an endless passion for providing superior European-style breads and pastries to the Bloomington, Normal, and Peoria areas, and to the occasional CSA closer to Urbana-Champaign. Dushan told a story about how, when he was starting to learn more complicated techniques, a batch of croissants didn't turn out the way they were supposed to, and he couldn't sleep. He got up and trawled the internet, looking for solutions into the wee hours. A bite into a recent Dushan-produced croissant indicates he's solved the problem. Family and tradition are really important to both of them, too. Both of them grew up in family businesses, have family members helping them with certain aspects of their current business. Dushan's mom loves working the farmers markets, and they deeply enjoy working long hours with each other.
I wouldn't want to work with anybody else. You know, her and I, even when we're working, we're still, it's like, what are you thinking about? What do you think about this? So, oh, I talked to this baker and it's so cool. And we're both, and it's great. We're both very passionate about the exact same thing. We have a very strong functional relationship thanks to about 2-3 years of working together. And it's fun.
The plan for Cottage Breads is to move up to Aurora to take over part of Dushan's parents' furniture warehouse and turn it into a bakehouse, where they can eventually take on apprentice couples who want to do the same thing. Food and love are what propel them forward.
And that's what's been driving us this whole time. It's just this love for food.
For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Well, I learned along the way during the program this afternoon that Pete Levitt is not available to do the weather forecast, so we talked with Dan Zwicker for just a bit longer, and we'll move back the cash grain segment with Matt Bennett a couple of minutes from now. We'll hear our segment momentarily with Dave Dickey. In the mean space, you can always find us online at willag.org if you'd like to hear the program or what Dan had to say again. In fact, I'll post Dan to our voicemail at 217-333-3434, not long after this program is over, and you can simply call it if you'd like.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com. Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's National Potato Chip Day. Historians generally give credit for the invention of the potato chip to George Crumb. In the summer of 1853, Crumb worked as a chef at a New York resort. One dinner guest was angry with Crumb's French fries, which he deemed too thick to his liking. Crumb decided to irritate the guest by slicing and deep frying potatoes too thin to be skewered with a fork. But the plan backfired. The guest loved the brown paper-thin potatoes, and the potato chip was born. Crumb knew a good thing when he saw it. By 1860, Crumb opened his own restaurant that featured a basket of his potato chips on every table. On this day in agricultural history in 1794, Eli Whitney patented the cotton gin. His basic machine made it possible to clean 50 pounds of cotton a day. There is controversy over whether Whitney actually is the inventor. Some historians believe that Whitney's landlord, Catherine Littlefield Green, should get the credit. She reportedly suggested to Whitney the machine's brush-like components, but could not patent the device because women were not eligible to receive patents. Other historians give credit for the invention to Joseph Watkins, who was using a gin on his farm 2 years before Whitney applied for a patent. It was only after Whitney visited Watkins and examined the Watkins gin that Whitney developed his model. And in 1903, President Theodore Roosevelt established the first U.S. National Bird Sanctuary to protect pelicans nesting on Pelican Island near Sebastian, Florida. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business, so Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
It's a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line, Matt Bennett to take a look at the cash grain market. He's with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Don.
What do you think of the expiration of the March contracts?
Well, it got a little crazy there earlier, but, you know, it didn't really do quite what I thought it might do. I mean, whenever we close that with a 16-cent, I guess with the close of the day on the May, I guess I wasn't too awfully surprised with that, but I thought it might be a little wider, but not terribly surprised.
Do you think it would be wider with the May lower than it is currently, or
I just thought that
higher?
I thought that the March actually might be a little bit higher, but, you know, it was interesting, especially on the beans. I didn't know whether they might go after some guys that were actually short the market or not, but it didn't seem like they got too aggressive there.
Mm-hmm. So your expectations for the opening tonight, what will the May contracts in both the corn and the beans try to do?
Well, I don't know. It was pretty interesting today to see, you know, corn kind of follow along with wheat, and then you got beans. And, you know, a couple of guys are telling me that they're hearing there might be a little bit of a tendency for corn acres not to be pushed so much with the profitability for both corn and beans where they're at right now. And that's part of the reason they feel like corn was a little higher and beans are a little softer. But to me, that's a tough game to play right now at this time of year. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe I don't know that it's going to have a whole lot to do with the March expiration, in my opinion, on what the overnight's going to do.
What are end users telling you about the availability of either crop?
Tight on both corn and beans, and, you know, regionally extremely tight. You know, you're hearing some pretty high basis levels for certain people. You know, like we've talked here lately, certain feeders, they've got to have corn. You know, an ethanol plant can go ahead and choose to shut down, but, you know, if you've got 8 million chickens on feed, you got to feed them something. And so, you know, we've been shipping quite a bit down to the southeast to chicken feeders, and I think that right now they're still pretty aggressive as far as what they're willing to pay to get the corn booked, at least out throughout the middle of the summertime frame.
So you think when we get to push comes to shove, it'll be the ethanol plants that shut down and the livestock guys will just feed?
Well, you would think that, but then this week, you know, we heard that there was a little bit of a profitability that came back into the ethanol sector. So pretty interesting to kind of watch this thing evolve. And so I don't know. I mean, that would be my tendency to think that that might be the case. But a lot of it's going to also depend upon, you know, how many bushels are we going to export or import from South America up in here. You know, obviously on the East Coast, they've been doing that for a few months. But you just kind of wonder whether there's going to be other areas it's going to trickle into. And that can certainly affect our basis levels if we see that on a broader scope.
What are your bids for the day?
Oh, cash corn 738, fall 535, cash beans 1456, and fall 1230.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. I'll be out tomorrow, all next week, and then Monday the following week. Thanks to Dave Dickey, who will take this seat and guide you through that process. I will be recording Commodity Week a day early, so we'll record this afternoon. You can visit our website. It'll be up, I would be certain, by 6, maybe even by 5 tonight. Dan Zwicker will be there, and Jackie Bakes, Mike Zuzulo, and Paula Savante, who's with Rabobank out of Argentina. Should be a great show. Commodity Week. It'll be up on the website by probably 5 o'clock this evening. You have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.